In the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
How dare you?
Oh, my word. And that man actually has a TV show on MSNBC. Thank you, Reverend Al. Hello there. Welcome into the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. It's an hour if you listen live. It's about 50 minutes if you don't, because I cut the breaks for the podcast subscribers. Good to have you here this morning. I'm glad to be back. Yesterday, I got up feeling like I should be signing in at the mortuary, so I decided it was finally time to stop dodging a trip to the doctor and get some things taken care of. So yesterday I traveled across town to the almost to the dark side of the moon and got a couple of shots and not the adult beverage kind. I got a couple of shots and a prescription for some pills that are almost as large as my dog. And now I'm back on my feet mostly. I have a feeling that not long after the podcast today, I'll be wanting to recline again. But hey, here we are. One of the shots that they give you when they do this, and if you haven't been through allergy issues or things like that, then you were probably not aware of this. So let me explain. They give you two shots to steamroll, to really ramp up your immune system and to fight whatever infection is taking a hold. And it was a sinus infection. And one of those is an antibiotic. The other is a steroid to accelerate the response. It's to ramp up everything in your body so that everything goes to work faster. That is the cheap and dirty convenience store explanation of how this works. I'm not a medical professional. I don't play one on TV or anywhere else. But one of the side effects of the steroid is that at least I do, and everybody I know who has had this procedure, you know, getting these shots and such, you get a little bit hyper, and you feel great. I mean, your energy level, bing, just goes through the roof. It's great. And the downside, yeah, there's a downside. The downside is that the night you get the shots, the night of the day you get the shots, you have trouble sleeping. And sometimes, depending on the dosage, maybe the next two, maybe the next couple of nights. And eventually, it's all out of your system and you crash like a big bus on the side of the highway. It's not an optimum thing. Let's just put it that way. But since my days are essentially scheduled by me, I can make arrangements so that I can take some crash time if I need to. Anyway, so here we are after a day spent. Well, yesterday was pretty much, it was running errands, the doctor and running errands was yesterday. And that, just to give you a somewhat of an idea of how bad it was, I was on the verge of not trusting myself driving. That's when this gets, for me, just for me, when it gets that bad, I know I can't fool around with this anymore. I can't treat it over the counter. I can't treat it with rest. I can't treat it with lots of fluids. I've done everything I'm supposed to do. Now I need to go get some help. And that's to the point where I'm giving myself plenty of room between me and the vehicle in front of me. I'm watching extra carefully as in traffic for anything and everything could possibly happen. Things you wouldn't normally think, you wouldn't be consciously thinking about, required a lot of focus and concentration yesterday. And those of you who would go out on the weekends and enjoy adult beverages probably know what that feels like. It is, but that day is over. It's done with. And today, we're talking about a different kind of sickness. It's the coronavirus, COVID-19. I'm going to play for you today the entirety of President Trump's address, which occurred last night, because I know not everyone saw it or heard it, and you need to hear what our president has said. I'm also going to play a couple of other things for you and approach this from a couple of other different directions, and I want to... I want to, first off, before I play this, and I'm going to play this in the first segment right now. First off, I want to tell you there's nothing to panic about. Panic is being produced by the progressive press and progressive politicians. There is nothing to panic about. I will explain why coming up very shortly. But first, President Trump.
My fellow Americans, tonight I want to speak with you about our nation's unprecedented response to the coronavirus outbreak that started in China and is now spreading throughout the world. Today, the World Health Organization officially announced that this is a global pandemic. We have been in frequent contact with our allies, and we are marshaling the full power of the federal government and the private sector to protect the American people. This is the most aggressive and comprehensive effort to confront a foreign virus in modern history. I am confident that by counting and continuing to take these tough measures, we will significantly reduce the threat to our citizens, and we will ultimately and expeditiously defeat this virus. From the beginning of time, nations and people have faced unforeseen challenges, including large-scale and very dangerous health threats. This is the way it always was and always will be. It only matters how you respond, and we are responding with great speed and professionalism. Our team is the best anywhere in the world. At the very start of the outbreak, we instituted sweeping travel restrictions on China and put in place the first federally mandated quarantine in over 50 years. We declared a public health emergency and issued the highest level of travel warning on other countries as the virus spread its horrible infection. And taking early, intense action, we have seen dramatically fewer cases of the virus in the United States than are now present in Europe. The European Union failed to take the same precautions and restrict travel from China and other hotspots. As a result, a large number of new clusters in the United States were seeded by travelers from Europe. After consulting with our top government health professionals, I have decided to take several strong but necessary actions to protect the health and well-being of all Americans. To keep new cases from entering our shores, we will be suspending all travel from Europe to the United States for the next 30 days. The new rules will go into effect Friday at midnight. These restrictions will be adjusted subject to conditions on the ground. There will be exemptions for Americans who have undergone appropriate screenings, and these prohibitions will not only apply to the tremendous amount of trade and cargo, but various other things as we get approval. Anything coming from Europe to the United States is what we are discussing. These restrictions will also not apply to the United Kingdom. At the same time, we are monitoring the situation in China and the South Korea. And as their situation improves, we will reevaluate the restrictions and warnings that are currently in place for a possible early opening. Earlier this week, I met with the leaders of health insurance industry who have agreed to waive all co-payments for coronavirus treatments, extend insurance coverage to these treatments, and to prevent surprise medical billing. We are cutting massive amounts of red tape to make antiviral therapies available in record time. These treatments will significantly reduce the impact and reach of the virus. Additionally, last week I signed into law an $8.3 billion funding bill to help CDC and other government agencies fight the virus and support vaccines, treatments, and distribution of medical supplies. Testing and testing capabilities are expanding rapidly. Day by day, we are moving very quickly. The vast majority of Americans, the risk is very, very low. Young and healthy people can expect to recover fully and quickly if they should get the virus. The highest risk is for elderly population with underlying health conditions. The elderly population must be very, very careful. In particular, we are strongly advising that nursing homes for the elderly suspend all medically unnecessary visits. In general, older Americans should also avoid non-essential travel in crowded areas. My administration is coordinating directly with communities with largest outbreaks, and we have issued guidance on school closures, social distancing, and reducing large gatherings. Smart action today will prevent the spread of the virus tomorrow. Every community faces different risks, and it is critical for you to follow the guidelines of your local officials who are working closely with our federal health experts, and they are the best. For all Americans, it is essential that everyone take extra precautions and practice good hygiene. Each of us has a role to play in defeating this virus. Wash your hands, clean often used surfaces, cover your face and mouth if you sneeze or cough, and most of all, if you are sick or not feeling well, stay home. To ensure that working Americans impacted by the virus can stay home without fear of financial hardship, I will soon be taking emergency action, which is unprecedented, to provide financial relief. This will be targeted for workers who are ill, quarantined, or caring for others due to coronavirus. I will be asking Congress to take legislative action to extend this relief. Because of the economic policies that we have put into place over the last 3 years, we have the greatest economy anywhere in the world by far. Our banks and financial institutions are fully capitalized and incredibly strong. Our unemployment is at a historic low. This vast economic prosperity gives us flexibility, reserves, and resources to handle any threat that comes our way. This is not a financial crisis. This is just a temporary moment of time that we will overcome together as a nation and as a world. However, to provide extra support for American workers, families, and businesses, tonight I am announcing the following additional actions. I am instructing the Small Business Administration to exercise available authority to provide capital and liquidity to firms affected by the coronavirus. Effective immediately, the SBA will begin providing economic loans in affected states and territories. These low-interest loans will help small businesses overcome temporary economic disruptions caused by the virus. To this end, I am asking Congress to increase funding for this program by an additional $50 billion. Using emergency authority, I will be instructing the Treasury Department to defer tax payments without interest or penalties for certain individuals and businesses negatively impacted. This action will provide more than $200 billion of additional liquidity to the economy. Finally, I am calling on Congress to provide Americans with immediate payroll tax relief. Hopefully, they will consider this very strongly. We are at a critical time in the fight against the virus. We made a life-saving move with early action on China. Now we must take the same action with Europe. We will not delay. I will never hesitate to take any necessary steps to protect the lives, health, and safety of the American people. I will always put the well-being of America first. If we are vigilant and we can reduce the chance of infection, which we will significantly impede the transmission of the virus. The virus will not have a chance against us. No nation is more prepared or more resilient than the United States. We have the best economy, the most advanced health care, and the most talented doctors, scientists, and researchers anywhere in the world. We are all in this together. We must put politics aside, stop the partisanship, and unify together as one nation and one family. As history has proven time and time again, Americans always rise to the challenge and overcome adversity. Our future remains brighter than anyone can imagine. Acting with compassion and love, we will heal the sick, care for those in need, help our fellow citizens, and emerge from this challenge stronger and more unified than ever before. God bless you, and God bless America. Thank you.
And there we have it. That's the entirety of his address last night. I wanted you to be able to have that, especially as a podcast subscriber. Now you have it in your mobile device or wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can refer back to it. And you should. You should refer back to it point by point because he made some excellent points. Now, there were a couple of clarifications issued afterwards because things are in a fluid state. They're constantly changing. And there are those like that moron, Don Lemon, over at CNN, who I hope is restrained somewhere and under medication after his appearance last night, who are emotional and psychotic, who are trying to make this into the plague, the Black Plague. Don't buy it. More after the break, as the Daily Perspective continues.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Nope. No time for foolishness. We just need facts. I have something coming up here very shortly about facts, and I just want to share those with you, okay? So let's focus on that in just a moment. Hang on here. I'm trying to get back where I was. All right, here we are. As usual, I was scanning media during the break and had to get back to my page that I need to be talking about now. It's a Thursday edition of the podcast. It's the 12th day of March, 2020. We're marching towards the Ides of March. And who knows what will be happening between now and then. So you've heard the president's address. We know that the progressive press, the progressive news media, and the progressive politicians are all waving their hands in the air, wringing their hands, clutching their pearls, gasping, everything they can to get your attention, and trying to convince you that there should be a panic. The World Health Organization, the WHO, to be honest, doesn't get things right as often as it should. They have declared a pandemic, and there are places which are declaring states of emergency. Now, let's be clear about this. I really don't have a problem with declaring a state of emergency on a state-by-state basis because that frees up agencies and money to deal with an issue when the state faces an issue. Declaring a state of emergency means that they can move fire departments around. They can move, they can move resources and assets around to deal with issues. And that's an important thing when you really do have a state of emergency. And right now, this is beginning to happen in state after state after state. I don't know if you've seen the maps, but there are now coronavirus cases in most states in the United States of America. There are cases. The death toll is still extremely low. Very, very, very low. And predominantly, it's people over 70 who have other health issues, health challenges. And their immune systems are already weak, their bodies are already weak, and they can't fight this stuff. And we're doing what we can, as you heard from the president, to fight this. One of those things is we're cutting off travel to the United States from foreign countries. President Trump announced that he is cutting off travel from Europe to the U.S., moving to ease the economic cost of a viral pandemic that's roiling global financial markets and disrupting the daily lives of Americans. Let's be clear on the roiling global financial markets thing. Some of it is due to coronavirus. Some of it is. Much of it is due to an ongoing feud between Russia and the Arab nations over oil. That's what's causing a lot of the problem right now. Trump made the announcement that he is suspending all travel from Europe to the U.S. for 30 days, beginning at 11:59 p.m. Friday. That is tomorrow, as I record here. That's just before midnight tomorrow night, during his rare Oval Office address to the nation. After days of playing down the threat, he blamed the European Union for not acting quickly enough to address the novel coronavirus, and claimed that U.S. clusters were seeded by European travelers. He said, "We made a life-saving move with early action on China. Now we must take the same action with Europe." Trump said, "Oh, by the way, in health officials practically from everywhere are saying the move on China was the right move. Don't believe what the progressive press is telling you." Trump said the restrictions won't apply to the UK. There would be exemptions for Americans who have undergone appropriate screenings. It also wouldn't apply to cargo. He said the U.S. would monitor the situation to determine if travel could be reopened later. You may be thinking, well, wait a minute, why not the UK? I don't know. Maybe the incidents in the UK haven't risen to the level of concern yet. We haven't seen anybody bringing it back from the UK. We have seen them bring it back from China and from Italy, but not the UK. And cargo, why not cargo? Well, you can sanitize cargo. You can spray it down, wipe it down, open it up, sanitize. You can require all kinds of restrictions and quarantines. Cargo you can deal with. People, that's a lot harder. After he spoke, the White House canceled a planned trip by the president to Nevada and Colorado this week out of an abundance of caution. The mounting effort to contain the virus and financial fallout intensified a grueling day. Communities canceled public events nationwide, universities moved to cancel in-person classes, and families grappled with the impact of disruptions to public schools. The number of confirmed cases of the infection topped 1,000 in the U.S., and the World Health Organization declared the global crisis is now a pandemic. And if you've been on social media, you've probably seen your friends on social media talking about how their kids' functions that they've been training for months have all been canceled. The NBA is canceling its things. They won't open the doors to crowds now. They'll play their games just for the officials with no crowds. College basketball is taking a hit. Everything public is taking a hit because everything is getting canceled. It's just everything is canceled. That's pretty much what it is. Everything is canceled. Oh. In a week of mixed messages and false starts, as government officials warned in increasingly urgent terms that the outbreak of the U.S. will only get worse, Washington suddenly seemed poised to act. Congress, for its part, unveiled a multi-billion-dollar aid package Wednesday that was expected to be voted on by the House as soon as today, Thursday. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said in a testimony before the House Oversight and Reform Committee, "I can say we will see more cases and things will get worse than they are now." He also said that the virus is 10 times more lethal than the seasonal flu. Let's stop right there. It is indeed 10 times more lethal than the seasonal flu. But that lethality rate is still only 1%. 1% of those who catch it. That's 1 out of 100 people who catch it are likely to die from it. And as the numbers are fluctuating worldwide, that percentage rate is dropping slowly. More on that a little bit later on. Trump spoke after days of confusion in Washington amid mounting calls on the president to demonstrate greater leadership. In the hours leading up to his remarks, White House aides struggled to determine what action the president could take unilaterally and what required congressional action. As Trump personally weighed the public and political actions or reactions to the options before him, he said he was also directing agencies to provide unspecified financial relief for workers who were ill, quarantined, or caring for others due to coronavirus, and asked Congress to take action to extend it. Trump said the U.S. will defer tax payments for some individual and business filers for 3 months to lessen the impacts of the virus outbreak. He said the Small Business Administration will also make low-interest loans available to businesses to help them weather the storm. He said, this is not a financial crisis. This is just a temporary moment of time that we will overcome together as a nation and as a world. He also reiterated his call on Congress to pass a cut to the federal payroll tax in order to stimulate the economy, though that proposal was dismissed by many lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. He remained silent on his previous calls to provide assistance to industries hard hit by the pandemic, like airlines and cruise ships. On Capitol Hill, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi unveiled an economic assistance plan that was gaining bipartisan backing. Central to the package is free coronavirus testing nationwide and emergency funding to reimburse lost paychecks for those self-quarantining, missing work, or losing jobs amid the outbreak. The draft legislation would create a new federal emergency sick leave benefit for people with the virus or caring for a coronavirus victim. It would provide 2/3 of an employee's monthly income for up to 3 months. How long will it take them to abuse this? How long will it take them to interpret that to mean we can apply this to anything and everything? I would say a split second. Well, we've seen that the president has made the address. He has called on America to stand strong and to stand together. And that's the appropriate approach, I think. He's shutting down travel from areas that we know the virus is traveling to America from. And in the process, he's getting abused. As I mentioned, Don Lemon over at CNN. He went nuts last night. And I got to be honest with you. I want you to look that up. Find the video. It's on YouTube. I looked at it this morning. But I'm not going to give Don Lemon any more time. He won't get any time here. Except for me to say, he's crazy. And he's mean. He's a mean, mean little man.
Light bulb.
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. Piloting the big ship through the crazy oceans that are the news today. Hoping you're having a good one. On this 12th day of March, a Thursday. I told you I had some other things to tell you about that you're not hearing anywhere else to counter what's happening now. I mean, the news of Tom Hanks and his wife testing positive for coronavirus. They're in Australia. They're going to be fine. Nothing going to happen to them. There's all of this news going on right now. All of these sources saying that you need to be scared. You need to be afraid. When in actuality, you just need to be wise. You need to wash your hands. You need to... It's like flu season, you take appropriate steps. You don't invite the sickness on yourself. You just don't. Take care. Be cautious, but don't be stupid, okay? Coronavirus is here. It is contagious, and it is potentially deadly. There's an article coming from the Western Journal by Josh Manning about how many new cases of coronavirus we're seeing. And it's a very revealing article. And you're not going to hear this anywhere because it's not feeding what's necessary for the progressive press and the progressive politicians, which is fear. Fear. Angela, let me just touch on this real quickly, and hopefully I'll have time to get back to it. But Angela Merkel, I don't know how you pronounce her name, she told the people of Germany, 70% of Germany is going to get the coronavirus, and there's not much we can do about it. She actually told the people, when the virus is out there, the population has no immunity and no therapy exists, then 60 to 70% of the population will be infected. The process has to be focused on not overburdening the health system by slowing the virus's spread. It's about winning time. She's not doing anything to encourage people. She's not doing anything to support them or boost them in any way. She's saying, well, this is what's going to happen. 60 to 70% of us are going to get this. And why would she do something like that? She would do something like that because fear is necessary in order to convince a population to give government more control. That's why. That's why the politicians want you scared. I'm not saying that coronavirus is not a real problem. I'm saying the politicians want you scared because a scared population will grant politicians more power. Back to the article by Josh Manning from Western Journal. Coronavirus is here. It's contagious. It's contagious. It's deadly. And aside from Mueller, Kavanaugh, and impeachment, it's hard to think of another story the media has been so excited about over the last 3.5 years. At first, the media's concern was warranted. An exotic virus pops up in China and begins spreading quickly. Then it turns out to be deadly. Never mind that it's deadly in the vast minority of cases and that those are overwhelmingly contained within the age 70-plus demographic. Then it goes international. Then the media starts to spook markets that depend on China. Then market corrections start. That's the stuff of a media feeding frenzy, and feed the media has. Stories about new cases, new borders crossed, and new famous and or powerful people quarantining themselves. Those stories, however, don't really get at the root of the question we need to ask at this point in the drama. The question we should be asking is whether or not the daily number of new cases is increasing inside different countries. Until the virus is eradicated entirely, new cases will continue to pop up. That's definitely or definitionally true. And as long as there are new cases and enough people traveling internationally, the virus will cross borders. These shouldn't be novel concepts, though the media continues to treat them as new apostolic revelations. What's far more helpful than the plain number of new cases is the number of new cases compared to the previous day. If daily new cases increase over time, then the contagion hasn't peaked. The contagion hasn't peaked. And more concern is warranted. If, however, the number of daily new cases begins to decrease over time, it's likely a critical milestone has been hit and the virus is on its way to being controlled, if not eradicated, for all intents and purposes. If new cases consistently decrease day after day, the eventual elimination of the virus is inevitable. Eventually, the new case count hits zero and stays there. Of course, someone's always going to have a pesky strain of the flu or common cold, but as far as the survival of humanity goes, the new case count will be essentially zero. Sure, the media may report new numbers as they become available, but a consistent comparison of new case counts over day over day is exactly what I'm not seeing anywhere in the media. Maybe it's being reported, and I've just missed it, but so far I haven't seen it anywhere. And I look at a lot of news each day. So, what does that count look like? It looks like light at the end of the tunnel, assuming that a tunnel even exists and wasn't created by media hysteria in the first place. Take China, for example. New cases reported peaked on February 12th. But since that was due largely in part to a reporting hiccup, let's take the next day as our peak, February 13th. That day saw 5,090 reported new cases of coronavirus in Japan. Though small upticks were reported every few days, daily decreases in new cases soon followed, leading to just 237 new cases reported 2 weeks later on February 27th. On March 6th, the last day data was reported, there were only 99 new cases. I shared this information with some people earlier today, and one of them said, "I don't trust anything China says." That's a smart guy, but this trend isn't confined to China. South Korea's cases peaked on March 3rd with 851 new reports. 6 days later, 165 new cases were reported. On Tuesday of this week, 35 new cases were reported in South Korea. Iran appears to have peaked on March 6th, with 1,234 new cases reported. 3 days later, there were 595 new cases. On Tuesday, cases jumped slightly to 881 new reports, so time will tell if the downward trend will continue in the coming days as it did in China and South Korea. China might have plenty of motivation to hide real numbers, but Iran doesn't. Better off, they are. They're better off if people think the virus's presence inside their borders is a proof of a genocidal CIA or Mossad plot. There's no more reason to doubt South Korea's figures than to doubt those of the U.S., France, or Germany. So what to make of all this? Coronavirus infections continue to spread. And that is actually dangerous. So wash your hands, don't share germs more than you have to, and practice good hygiene. If you're elderly, be especially careful, because the elderly are most likely to experience death from coronavirus or its complications, about 14% for those 80 and over. For those under 50, it's about 0.4%. Moving forward, not only will the virus continue to spread, but daily new cases will continue to grow until the virus peaks on a global level. While new infections in China, South Korea, and Iran appear to have peaked, they have not done so in France, Germany, Italy, Spain, or the U.S. In fact, in some of those countries, it appears to just now be taking off. Additionally, the Southern Hemisphere hasn't been dramatically impacted yet. It likely will be, and the results may be alarming for a while, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. But eventually, the virus will peak there, too. China's draconian measures may have helped stop the virus's spread, but those measures aren't necessary to beat the virus. Neither Iran nor South Korea took the measures China did, yet they both appear to be turning the corner, too. Coronavirus is only tangentially related to oil prices. Yes, any slowdown in Chinese manufacturing will affect oil prices vis-a-vis consumption, but the sudden drop in oil prices is due to Saudi Arabia dropping their prices dramatically, which is unrelated to the virus. For now, enjoy the cheaper gas and the fact that Saudi Islamists and the Russians are making far less money than they were a week ago. Democrats desperately need coronavirus to continue across the globe, sparking financial panic everywhere it spreads. Only a financial meltdown will stop Trump in November. And they know it. There's a little more to the article. We'll pick it back up after the break. But as you can see, if you look at things honestly, and you acknowledge the fact that new cases have peaked where this all started, things are actually looking positive, not negative.
You're a big, fat, bumbling, oblivious, pepe-wearing mega idiot.
What? What did I say? Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Let's pick back up again where we left off on this article from Western Journal. Democrats desperately need coronavirus to continue across the globe, sparking financial panic everywhere it spreads. Only a financial meltdown will stop Trump in November, and they know it. Having toilet paperless voters panicking at the polls is exactly what Democrats want and need. That alone should cause every American to question Democrats' loyalty to the voters. Once the virus peaks, the economy may well go into overdrive, which is the very last thing Democrats want. Because, again, Trump will get credit. As of this writing, the Dow is down 19% over last month. Once the Chinese supply chain is stabilized, and hopefully global manufacturers begin to find alternatives to China, and the public realizes the world isn't ending, a buying spree should turbocharge stock prices. Will they return to their early February heights? Who can tell? But a rebound is certain to come, along with store shelves that will once again overflow with toilet paper and hand sanitizer. Tangentially, until it happens, and as long as raising prices on things like toilet paper and sanitizer is viewed as gouging, shortages of toilet paper and sanitizer will continue to exist. If manufacturers and retailers would raise prices to meet demand, store shelves would be fully stocked at this very moment. But everyone's afraid the media will call them gougers. So prices stay low, encouraging panic buying and leading to shortages. Coronavirus is dangerous. It can even be deadly, just like everything else a human being can catch. It is not, however, going to destroy the world, despite the fact that fear on that level is exactly what Democrats want. But Democrats' political needs aside, the best we can tell at this point is that in China, a country of 1.4 billion people, about 81,000 people have contracted the virus, and just over 3,000 have died from it. In other words, in China, the virus has killed 0.0002% of the population. 0.0002. That's 2/100,000ths of 1%. In the United States, presently, the death total is 0.00009% of the population. Out of 330 million. Those deaths are tragic. But they shouldn't start or propel panic, especially when panic is exactly what the left and the media need to stave off Trump. And I'm glad he added the media. Because every time in the article it says, but Democrats, or what Democrats want, I want to add Democrat, you mean Democrats and the leftist press. Because the leftist press, as I posted on social media this morning, thrives on panic. When there is some kind of an emergency, something going on, something horrific is happening, all the cameras focus on that. All the reporters are focusing on the terrible thing. Why? Because that kind of thing attracts eyeballs and ears. And it makes people watch and listen. And it makes them hold on for longer. Pay attention for longer. And the more people they have watching and or listening, and the longer they stay, the higher they can charge for advertising time. Because it's the bottom line that is the most important thing. So specifically the leftist press is standing on the bodies of horrible victims. They're standing on the blood shed by people who are harmed. And they are standing on the graves of people killed by diseases. Because it's good for the bottom line. So please don't make the mistake that the press is doing some noble thing like speaking truth to power. They're not. They're looking at their bottom line. Looking for ways to drive up viewership. Which is why so many people, one reason so many people have moved away from the progressive press. And they're finding other sources for their information. For example, another source for your information that you, unless you watch C-SPAN, you won't know about is podcasts like this, websites that dedicate themselves to this kind of thing, like the Daily Perspective podcast site and the folks over at Chicks on the Right and Dan Bongino and people like that. There are lots of people who are looking beyond what the mainstream leftist press wants to put out there, and they are supplying you with information you can't get in other places because those other places have an agenda, and that agenda is to make as much money as possible, and that agenda is bolstered by their hatred for anything conservative. So if they can make a lot of money and destroy a presidency, a conservative presidency, at the same time, that's a double bonus for them. But if you look beyond the mainstream press, you will find out some very interesting things. For example, you're being told that President Trump's response was too little too late, was insipid, was stupid, was idiotic. But that's not the case. Republican Representative Mark Green sums things up.
I'm incredibly disappointed in the politicization of this COVID-19 response. The 24/7 criticism the president is undergoing is unwarranted at a minimum and absolutely maligns the hard work done over years as our nation's doctors and scientists at places like the CDC, the NIH, the FDA, the HHS, DHS, FEMA, and DOD have prepared for just such an eventuality. Make no mistake about it, this virus is a serious problem. But that concern was immediately shown by our president as evidenced by his historic response. And I'd like to take a second to correct the record. On December 31st, Wuhan officials posted the first notice saying they were investigating a pneumonia outbreak. On January the 7th, the CDC established an incident management system just 7 days later. On January the 17th, CDC sent 100-plus staffers to specific airports in the United States to screen all people coming from Wuhan. On January the 21st, just 3 weeks after the announcement, the CDC activated its Emergency Operations Center. On January the 29th, the President established the Presidential Task Force. On January the 30th, still less than a month from the initial announcement, the State Department issued a Do Not Travel warning to China. January the 30th, the World Health Organization announced that the coronavirus is a public health emergency of international concern. Meaning, before the World Health Organization even announced a global concern, the administration was working on its response for almost a month and had already established a presidential task force. On January the 31st, to the cries of racism, President Trump proactively suspended entry of foreign nationals who'd been to China in the last 14 days. On the 31st, the President issued quarantines and, through Secretary Azar, a public health emergency for the entire nation. On February the 11th, the World Health Organization named the virus COVID-19. Let that sink in. The administration's first response a week after the Wuhan announcement. The virus hadn't even been named by the World Health Organization yet. It isn't named until day 42. Meanwhile, the CDC, the NIH, and all the agencies of our scientific community with acronyms that boggle the mind have been working feverishly to sequence the RNA of the virus, get its proteins, messenger RNA sequenced, and get a vaccine going. On February the 24th, the President unveiled the initial plan. Yet, according to the leadership of the other party, our president has failed us. Months of response, and yet they're accusing our president of failing us. On February the 26th, the president appointed the vice president to head the whole of government response. That appointment is in keeping with the 2015 Obama-era Blue Ribbon Panel on Biodefense. On February 29th, 60 days after the Chinese announcement, sadly, America lost its first victim to COVID-19. So 53 days before America lost a single life to COVID-19, the administration was already working diligently to prepare our country. You've heard the witnesses describe the Herculean efforts their various departments are taking to protect the lives and health of Americans. I want to thank the dedicated men and women of CDC, NIH, FDA, HHS, DHS, FEMA, and DOD for the years of work that has gone into preparing for this type of effort, and their tireless 24/7 response since the announcement just 71 days ago. America will lose lives to this virus. But as was noted by Obama appointee and former director of the CDC, Tom Friedman, had the president not responded so quickly, we would not have been prepared as we are, and more lives would have been lost.
And this is extremely important to remember when you see all of those news reports trying to stir up panic. When you see the news reports blaming Trump for COVID-19, the coronavirus. When you see progressives in politics and in the news media trying to condemn our president. Go back and refer to that. And if you want it, it's in the show notes today. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. and grab the show notes as soon as you've listened to this show. They're there. Pull it up yourself, store it in your cell phone, and when somebody starts whinging on about how ineffective the president has been, play it for them. Because they're wrong. And that's it for me. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow for the Friday edition of the podcast. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.